Moolala is brought to you by the nonprofit credit counseling agency, Credit Canada. Wouldn't it be nice to own a share of the company you work for? Well, I guess it depends on the company, but let's say it's a great company with a great future. You might be interested in owning a piece, maybe in employee ownership. But the policies needed for this to really work in Canada aren't in place. The nonprofit Canadian Employee Ownership Coalition is hoping to change that. It's hoping to bring the benefits of employee ownership to a broader audience here. John Schell joins us now to talk about the idea and how it would work. Hello there.
Hi there.
I used to work for a big multinational, and there was a stock ownership plan, which they were very keen on us participating in,
right,
because they believed it was a good investment and it was great for employee engagement. That is not possible for small businesses because they're not publicly traded. How would you explain employee ownership outside of the model where they prompt you to buy shares on the public market?
It actually is possible if it's done in a way like you did at the multinational. So right now, employee ownership in Canada is accessible, you know, if you buy shares from an owner, but you can only buy a certain amount, or through stock options like you might have had at your multinational company. But generally, those stock options end at like a minority shareholding, right? So you can end up having employees own 10, maybe 20%. Of the company, and that's great, you know, and we're, you know, that's a super we're super supportive of that. We think it's useful. What we don't have in Canada is a structure to allow for employee ownership in a succession context, and that's where employee ownership really has taken off in the U.S. and the U.K. When an owner is looking to retire and is looking at their options to sell the company, in those countries, they can sell the whole company at once to their employees using debt without having their employees have to pay for it. And that's what has created this incredible program of improving wealth inequality in those countries, which actually are, you know, obviously very unequal. But these are very particularly particular programs in those countries that have been very successful. In the U.S., for example, there are 14 million Americans who own $1.7 trillion in the companies they work for, using this, what they call an ESOP in the US, and they call an EOT in the UK, but these employee stock ownership programs where the owner has sold the company to their employees, and that is unavailable in Canada.
What would be required of our country to make that possible?
So the things that have made this successful in the US and the UK is, one, there has to be a structure, right? So there needs to be a trust structure in place in the Income Tax Act that allows for these things to happen. We do not have that in Canada today. The second are incentives. So if we think about the economy we want, you know, in the US and the UK, the politicians across the political spectrum have said, we want to see more employee-owned companies. They have wonderful outcomes, not just for worker wealth, but also for communities. They keep jobs in local communities. These companies tend to grow faster. They lay off fewer people in recessions. So there are tax incentives to encourage owners to sell to their employees, as opposed to, say, a private equity firm or a competitor. And then you need to ensure, in exchange for those tax incentives, that the employees get their shares for free and they go to all employees. And that's what's allowed, you know, there's a wonderful example of this in the U.S. in the southeastern states called Publix. It's a grocery store. It's got about 200,000 employees, so it's roughly the size of Loblaws, and it's over 80% owned by their employees, and grocery clerks who've worked there for 30 or 40 years will retire with $1 million in their share account, right? Those are the outcomes that are just, you know, that are unachievable here in Canada that have been wonderful success stories in the U.S. So those are the three things we need in Canada.
And certainly that example is of a successful company and they bought in at the right time. If a clerk were to buy in or get employee ownership today, there's nothing to say that in 30 years they would also have $1 million.
100%. So the key here is that the employees don't take on a risk themselves, right? So the thing we don't want is a system where employees are taking their, you know, money that they don't have. You know, these are generally, employees don't have a ton of extra cash hanging around, especially these days. We don't want them taking that money and putting them into the company and then maybe losing all of that. The way these programs work is often it is a bank and the owner who fund the transaction, and then they are paid back out of company cash flow. So the employees themselves don't take on a debt risk, right? So it's all upside for the employees. That's why the tax incentive is important.
Right. What rights and responsibilities do they have in that context? Because if you own a share of a publicly traded company, depending on the class of shares, you get a vote.
So the way these work is they're owned through a trust. And that's partly what's made them successful in the US and the UK, is that the trust itself has a trustee that votes the shares. So the employees themselves get beneficial ownership, right? So they get all of the benefit of future profits of the company, but they don't have a day-to-day different responsibility than they had before. The company continues to be run in the way it was. If you take a look at an example, like Taylor Guitars in the US, which is a 1,200 person, a wonderfully run company, very sustainable, sold to their employees last year with a really thoughtful management team, you wouldn't want the next day for it to be one member, one vote, right? So Taylor Guitars is still run by the same wonderful management team, but now the benefits of their growth will go to employees as opposed to their old owners.
What have you seen in other countries about the unionization of these firms? Because it would seem to me, having thought about it for about 4 seconds, that in some ways that might be inconsistent with a highly unionized environment.
So there are some very successful companies in the US that are both fully unionized and fully owned by the employees at the same time, right? So there's a grocery chain in Oklahoma that has done really well with that structure. In other cases, the union doesn't want to participate in employee ownership, and then there can be two programs, right? So they can exist side by side. Either way, the transition of a company to their employees is, you know, to the benefit of workers. So it's a worker-focused program. So we've generally had good support from the union movement because, you know, the outcomes are really good for workers. There are some cases, where a union already has secured that for their workers. So there wouldn't be much additional benefit for employee ownership, but these are designed for, you know, sort of 50 to 200 employee companies in the private sector. The vast majority are not unionized. And so there will be a lot of opportunity for these to provide benefits to workers that they don't already have.
What's the case against this here in Canada? If I had all the time in the world, I'd have a point counterpoint and someone else would say, this is a terrible idea, don't do this. What would they say?
You know, look, it's an interesting case, and I'll try to answer your question without these. People say, hey, what's your worst quality? I say, well, I'm a perfectionist, so I'm not going to try to answer it that way. What is true is that there tends to be broad support for these. So you get Bernie Sanders advocating for more tax incentives for ESOPs, and you get Ronald Reagan advocating for more tax incentives for employee-owned companies. In the UK, it was a coalition government that brought this in to begin with, that spanned both sides of the political spectrum. So there doesn't tend to be that. This is one of those things where everyone says, yeah, this is a good public policy. And there doesn't tend to be a lot of disagreement. You just also don't get a bunch of people picketing out front of the, you know, parliament to bring this into place. So there generally is not a lot of argument against it. If one could say, hey, you're giving a tax incentive to owners here. So this is like, this can be used as some sort of tax shield, and we don't like that. And that's probably the strongest argument we get against it. And our response to that is, first, there's a bunch of rules you need to put in place to make sure that doesn't happen. And those are easy, you know, those are easy rules to implement. So this won't work like a tax shield in that way. And the second is the outcomes are generally so good for workers that the outcomes for society are good. Right. So it is worth providing a tax incentive for this program, as opposed to having companies owned by a foreign owned private equity company, or you get a multinational come in and buy up all our companies. One great Canadian example. So there's a company in southern Manitoba, in Altona, Manitoba, called Friesens, which has been employee owned for about 60 years here in Canada. They've done it using, you know, scotch tape and baling wire to try to deal with all the negative incentives there are in Canada. But there's no way that company, which employs 650 people in Altona, that's the biggest employer in town, would still be there if it wasn't employee owned. And that's the reason why governments in other countries have been willing to provide these types of tax incentives to ensure the economy is more owned through employee ownership than other means.
Just before we go, what needs to be true about the mindset of the owner for them to pursue this path? Because I can imagine, and I'd say it's a majority of owners who would say, listen, this is my liquidity event. I am going to sell and I'll top bidder, and maybe it's private equity, maybe it's a competitor. It would maybe not be at the top of the priority list to make this plan available to employees. Yeah.
So in the UK, where they waive capital gains taxes for owners who sell to their employees, it still only comprises like 5 to 10% of transactions. So the vast majority of owners do what you just said, right? The question is, do we want it to be 0% of the economy, or do we want it to be 10% of the economy? And the 10% that chooses to do it, or the 5% that choose to do it, do tend to be community-oriented owners who have owned their companies for a long time, often built them up from scratch, have a real loyalty to their employees. And that's not everybody, right? This isn't for everybody. But for those owners, and of which there are a lot in Canada, and many of them have reached out to us over the last couple of years, we've been talking about this, saying this is something they'd be really interested in. For those owners, this allows them to transact their, you know, sell their company in a way that makes them feel much better about the legacy that they've built over the decades to come. But as you say, it's not for everybody.
Really interesting. Well, thank you for giving us a sense for what could be if you are successful in your quest.
Well, thanks. And look, and what could be is a lot, right? So the projections that we've seen suggest that 115,000 employees, could earn $8 to $9 billion in their companies over the next 8 years if we do this. And so, 5 to 10% is enough to be really meaningful in this economy.
John, thank you.
Thank you.
John Schell is with the not-for-profit Canadian Employee Ownership Coalition. Its focus is to bring the benefits of broader employee ownership to Canada.